Let's start in the Wayback Machine, back to the 1950s.
Crystal milk is best of all. So sing along with the crystal ball.
Crystal, crystal, we've been drinking crystal milk.
So that's how milk was marketed in the United States.
Really farm fresh, that's for sure.
Choose the gold medal winner.
Over the decades, milk marketing has targeted our taste for wholesome goodness.
When you've worked up a taste for something really refreshing, remember, it's fresh milk that's this cold.
In the 1970s, it was
this pure.
Ah.
That's milk. The fresher refresher.
Ah.
In the 80s, we learned that milk does a body good.
It really does a body good.
Pass it on.
Gen X had an edgier take in the 90s with director Michael Bay, who'd eventually make all of those Transformers movies, launching a series of ads asking a very important question.
Got milk?
And millennials and Gen Z got The Rock.
We're out of milk.
Are you kidding me?
Milk has always been a part of American culture. Whole 2%. Fat-free, I was surprised to learn, was hot back in the 50s.
New Pet Instant Non-Fat Milk. Every drop of new Pet refreshes you more than fresh whole milk because the high-calorie fat is gone. It's great.
And now, milk is still part of the culture, but like many other things, has become part of the culture war.
The Trump administration is bringing whole milk back to school lunches.
Designed the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act.
It was vilified in 2012, whole milk.
And that's what we're working to fix today.
That is from the Instagram of the U.S. Department of Agriculture touting the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act, signed in January, which reverses Obama-era restrictions on higher-fat milk in schools in an effort to fight childhood obesity. Now, on the surface, a flexible policy that could change based on new, credible evidence is a good thing. But is promoting whole milk at the expense of other healthy fat options a good thing? And what about kids who can't comfortably drink milk? A large percentage of American kids can't. What are their options for getting healthy fats and other nutrients into their diets? Let's find out. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
On January 14th, 2026, President Trump sat at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, surrounded by a couple of cabinet members, a bunch of farmers, and some kids, and he had his chunky black Sharpie poised over an official document.
So today I'm delighted to sign the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act into law, which is a very important thing for our farmers, and I think maybe more important for our people,
yes.
The people that drink milk.
This law allows schools participating in the National School Lunch Program to offer 2% and whole milk options with school lunches.
Thank you, Howard, very much. So let's sign it. Should I sign it?
Yes, sir.
It was a shot across the bow in a culture war most Americans, frankly, didn't know we were fighting. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr. spoke at the signing.
For years, Washington treated fat, especially saturated fat, as the enemy. It made a war on saturated fat. This is the peacetime president. He's made 8.5 deals ending wars, and he's also ended the war on saturated fat.
Saturated fat. The American Heart Association says that saturated fat is found in animal-based foods like beef, pork, poultry, full-fat dairy products like milk, eggs, and tropical oils like coconut and palm oil. It's generally solid at room temperature, and the bad stuff, it is associated with higher cholesterol and an increased risk of heart disease. As part of new federal dietary guidelines, Kennedy's HHS has traded out the old MyPlate approach to what he calls an inverted food pyramid. That's a takeoff on the USDA food pyramid from the olden days, you know, back when I was a kid. But as far as saturated fat goes, nothing's changed. Both MyPlate and Kennedy's inverted pyramid recommend a maximum of 10% of a person's daily calories come from saturated fat. Still, kids in school will now have access to whole milk if they want it. And the idea is that whole milk is a shortcut, kind of, to get kids not only a dose of healthy fat for brain building, milk also contains a lot of other good stuff. But not all shortcuts are good. Is this one good? And if a kid can't tolerate milk, how do they get these healthy fats and other nutrients into their diets? Who can I ask about that?
I'm Marina Chaparro. I'm a pediatric registered dietitian behind NutriChicos, which is a community really aim to help parents really raise healthy eaters who can enjoy food without diets and really learn to appreciate culture and joy. And my motto has always been less fear, more joy and connections at mealtimes. And that's what I hope to do.
Thank you, Marina, for joining us. All right, let's start with this. I'm a parent, and I know how tough it is to just get any healthy food into kids. Mine, thankfully, is 20 now, and she can make her own food decisions. But when she was little, yeah, it could be a real battle.
Oh, yes. And I always say, the moment we step into that ring, we will lose. So we kind of need to develop strategies to outsmart them.
And that can be tough. So when you find something simple like whole milk that has all kinds of good stuff in it, it's easy to lean on it. So let's talk about milk. When I was young in the 80s, the recommendation for really everything was to avoid fat. So saturated fat, unsaturated fat, just skip it. Just put on your leotard, do your Jane Fonda, eat your weird ultra-processed fat-free snacks. So my mom had skim milk in the house. How have recommendations evolved over the years?
Previously, the recommendations have really focused on low-fat dairy. And up until a few years ago, we're having emerging studies to say, actually, what we thought about whole milk might not necessarily be the case. And so what we know now from research is that kids who consume full-fat milk can actually have lower odds of obesity and overweight. So there's been some positive or neutral associations when it comes to adiposity, aka weight. And even for adults, blood pressure, cardiometabolic risk are either beneficial or neutral. So the question now becomes, if the government is dictating full-fat milk and there are kids who cannot tolerate it, what do we do?
All right, so let's talk about that, because I think that some people might assume that since milk is our first food, it should be fine for everyone always. But up to 50 million Americans are lactose intolerant because they don't make much or any of an enzyme that helps them digest the sugar in milk, which is what lactose is, milk sugar. So the enzyme that digests lactose is called lactase. So when do humans start experiencing lactose intolerance?
So infants, it is very rare to have lactose intolerance because infants have a higher enzyme of the lactase because they're normally going to have breast milk and they need this as the primary source for fuel. But as of 5 years of age, then we start seeing the rates go up.
Right, because ancient humans didn't really drink milk after being weaned from their mother. We don't really need milk after that when we're done with our mother's milk, right? So in our default state, humans stop making lactase by the time kids are around kindergarten age. But babies, most little ones have no problem with milk sugar. Now, a little detour here. Some babies do have trouble digesting the cow's milk that is the basis for most formulas, but not because of the lactose, but because they're sensitive to the proteins in cow's milk. They're different from the proteins in human milk. Cow's milk protein intolerant babies won't do better with lactose-free formula because milk sugar is not the problem. They will need a cow's milk formula that has been hydrolyzed, meaning the protein's been broken down into inoffensive, digestible little bits. And I just bring that up because it's personal to me. My daughter had cow's milk protein intolerance, and even I couldn't consume cow's milk proteins when I was breastfeeding her because it would make her sick. And she couldn't tolerate regular cow's milk until she was like 10, but now she can drink it just fine. But I definitely digress there. The point is, most babies are fine with lactose. They need milk sugar, and they also need fat.
So when we hear fat, most adults just automatically think it's a bad thing. It's like, oh, we want to minimize fat, because I think that's what we've been told as adults. What parents don't realize is that kids' brains run out of fat, and we need to prioritize fat to build brain, to build those nerve endings, that myelination. I want healthy fat. In fact, we even know that even saturated fat for infants can actually play a big role in brain development. I never want parents to be afraid of fat when we're talking about those first 2 years of life.
So no war on saturated fat for babies, okay? Meat is an okay early food.
When I see a client that is just about to start solids, this is probably my favorite consult with a family, because they're thinking, or they've been told, ay, sopitas and the veggies or the caldito, but without the actual meat or without the actual beans or without the actual chicken. And my recommendation is, on the contrary, I want those iron-rich, protein-rich, zinc-rich. I want those as a first food. Why? Because those are going to have those key nutrients that are going to support your baby's growth.
But as children get older, as we've been talking about, their ability to tolerate lactose can change. Listen to these numbers. More than 90% of children of Asian descent develop lactose intolerance. Up to 90% of Black and Indigenous Americans lose the ability to easily digest lactose. And up to 80% of Latino and Hispanic kids have an uncomfortable relationship with milk. That percentage drops to about 25% in people with European ancestry. The remaining 75%, including me, have a genetic mutation that allows what's called lactase persistence. We continue to make lactase and can continue to digest milk sugar into adulthood.
It could be because in Europe, there's a high incidence of dairy consumption that could potentially stimulate some of this enzyme.
That's right. Northern Europeans started living alongside cows like 9,000 years ago or something like that, and started consuming dairy products way back then. So later, when there was famine or when there were diseases, experts think that those with the mutation for lactase persistence who could consume dairy without getting sick did better over the long term than others. And so now, far fewer Northern Europeans are lactose intolerant.
But if we are lactose intolerant, this does not mean we cannot have dairy. There are dairy options that are going to be lower in lactose, and a better alternative is going to be lactose-free milk, which, according to the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act, which is going to be effective in 2026, their schools may offer whole, reduced, low-fat, fat-free fluid and lactose-free fluid. We still have options that don't have the lactose, which is a lactose-free milk. So we're still getting that same nutrition, the calcium, the protein, the vitamins, without the lactose. So that is the great news.
It is, because as I mentioned, those shortcuts for getting healthy stuff into kids, they're lifesavers. And as a mom whose child struggled with cow's milk for a different reason, I found that just because a person can't tolerate a glass of whole milk, they might be able to tolerate something else, like yogurt. Is that true for people who are lactose intolerant too?
Yes. And sometimes we might need to test out what can a person tolerate. Sometimes milk, actual milk, might be the hardest one to tolerate, but things like Greek yogurt or a kefir or hard cheese, wonderful dairy choices. Kefir, not to mention, is going to have the probiotics there, plus the calcium, the vitamin D. And so those are actually going to be great alternatives to include. And many people are going to be able to tolerate it even more than, for example, just a regular milk.
It's so funny that you brought up kefir because that is one of our main go-tos. I started offering her kefir when she was a toddler and she loved it then. She's loved it all her life. She still loves it. She was home just the other night and we made kefir smoothies and watched movies. So we just love them.
It is. It's delicious. It's delicious. My kids also love it. But some families have never been introduced or just don't know what to do with the ingredient. So I think that's where we might say, hey, this is actually, you just use it in the same way as a milk. You know, sometimes I use yogurt or even kefir to bake. I have a banana bread that I use with Greek yogurt and it's delicious. So it's things that maybe you were already doing, but you just never knew that you could use that food as a vehicle into other foods.
Let's talk about the limitations on saturated fat. The food guidelines still recommend that people get only 10% of their calories from fat from animal products, and whole milk is higher in calories than some other options.
So I think maybe some healthcare providers could argue that if a child is overweight, should we then change to a low-fat milk because we're not getting those additional calories, additional saturated fat from milk. And I think that is where individualization will come into play. But I think my message to parents would be, first and foremost, it could be taste, right? So what is your family already consume? What do they already eat? What do they already drink? And kind of what is comfortable there? And I'd rather remove other sources of fat, ideally unhealthy fat or saturated fat, from elsewhere than to say, oh, just skip the milk. You don't really need the milk because it's giving you too many calories. Because again, there's a lot of nutrients that we're getting from dairy and from milk that we're not getting from other sources of fat. So I think that's what's unique about dairy milk or full fat milk, that yes, it's going to provide fat, but it's also going to provide calcium. And we need that to support strong bones.
Strong bones immediately makes me think of an episode of Petri Dish that we did recently on vitamin D.
Kids need vitamin D. And according to studies, a lot of kids are low in vitamin D. So it's not just a matter of more sunlight, right?
Right, because from November to April, no one in the U.S. is getting enough vitamin D from the sun, and kids with darker skin are going to get even less vitamin D from the sun. So American kids have got to get vitamin D any way they can, and milk is a good option for that, too.
Yes, milk sometimes has an additional component of vitamin D, which, again, we need for strong bones and even immunity. We also could consume vitamin D from fish, right? Another source of that fat-soluble vitamin that we're getting. Sometimes even from fortified cereals, fortified food, that you will see additional vitamin D there. And so, yeah, I think it goes back to, it's not just about one nutrient.
But for some kids, milk and dairy are still going to be a no-go. So how do we make sure that those kids get the nutrition they need for healthy brains and bodies? Arina Chaparro of NutriChicos has some fantastic ideas on that and some thoughts specifically for Hispanic families. We'll have all that when Petri Dish continues. Thank you.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio's Mays Cancer Center, South Texas NCI-designated cancer center, providing cancer care for patients, advancing research, and educating the next generation of leaders. Mays Cancer Center is working to end cancer in South Texas and beyond. Learn more at mayscancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Buddy Petri. Back in January, when President Trump signed the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins said she expected things to move quickly after that.
So we're signing the bill, and USDA, we're moving at Trump time, is posting today the new rulemaking that is necessary to get whole milk back into school lunches. So that's a really, really big deal.
So how long will that take?
It should just take a few weeks, and then the milk starts moving in. So it's a big announcement, sir, for our schools and our children. And I know Secretary.
This act also allows schools to stock lactose-free milk for the many American kids who can't easily digest milk sugar. They're lactose intolerant. But even then, not all kids are going to be able to drink milk, and some may just not want to. So how do parents make sure they get the same healthy fat, protein, vitamin D, calcium, and all the other nutrients that their classmates may get from a daily carton of milk? We've been talking to pediatric dietitian Marina Chaparro of NutriChicos.com. So, Marina, what do you suggest for kids for whom milk is just, no, it's a hard pass?
So when we're talking about healthy fats, we want to think about the avocados, the olive oils, even the polyunsaturated fats, the canola oils, the avocado oils. But I think a more realistic one is going to be in the form of nuts, right? So nuts for kids, it becomes challenging because of school.
Right. A lot of schools are nut-free because peanut allergies can be lethal and no one wants to be responsible for killing a classmate. So keep the nuts at home, and at school, there may be some other options.
We could do a sunflower seed. I know my kids really love sunflower or even a pumpkin seed. So there are alternatives, but nuts, whether it's nuts as part of a trail mix, it could be a great source of fats. We also know that canned tuna, canned salmon, right? It's going to be more convenient, easier potentially for kids to be introduced to any of the fatty fish.
Marina, a lot of your work is focused on helping Hispanic families find ways to make healthy food choices while still embracing their traditions and the ecstasy of eating. What suggestions for healthy fats do you have that celebrate Hispanic food culture and that the rest of us might enjoy too?
As part of a culturally rich Hispanic diet, besides maybe the avocado and essentially some nuts, like flaxseed or linaza or chia seed, which are more regional. They are in Peru, including them as part of smoothies, right? So instead of just saying, let's only do orange juice, we could do a little bit of orange juice with maybe some kefir, that's a mango, and maybe we add some frozen fruit, and then we add some seeds in form of like a powdered chia seed or a powdered flaxseed. So it's a simple, easy way to transform a batido, which is a very culturally known staple, by adding a couple of shifts, whether it's full-fat kefir, we're getting the probiotics, the vitamin D, the calcium. We're also adding some of those, what I call nutrition boosters, maybe some nuts, maybe some flax seeds that are already very simple to just add. That is what I mean of giving culturally representative and appropriate recommendation, in a sense that you don't have to alter your entire food. Just maybe you're already consuming smoothies or batido or maybe an oatmeal, right? An avena. So can we have what type instead of water? Can we do a milk, whether it's 2% whole milk? I don't really care. Could we add some nuts to that? Could we add some peanut butter? And hey, let's just chop up a little blueberries, banana, apple. So again, a very typical breakfast for many families, but we're just pumping it up. We're adding it up in a very simple, realistic way that is going to be approved by kids and also families.
And you can do all of that no matter what your cultural foods and ways of eating are, you know, just sort of make a few shifts, kefir smoothie here, a handful of blueberries there, a sunflower butter sandwich at school for lunch, and yes, maybe a carton of whole milk, maybe lactose-free. Marina, there is so much information coming at us right now, and you deal mostly with parents. What advice do you give them to help them navigate this sort of tsunami of information?
So I think my biggest takeaway, especially as parents are navigating an influx of information, is also to question the source of information. And for me is, if anybody is giving you a sense of guilt or instilling more fear than you already have, I would question that.
And what if someone, a medical professional or someone else, makes you feel guilt or fear about the foods and ways of eating that have been shared in your family for generations? In your case, maybe staples that may be high in carbohydrates like rice or tortillas.
If somebody is telling you you should eliminate tortillas and rice, I would look for another provider, because I'm Marina Chaparro, pediatric registered dietitian with type 1 diabetes from the border town of El Paso, Texas, and Ciudad Juarez. And I eat tortillas, and I eat dark chocolate, and I eat calabacitas, and I eat broccoli, and all of the above.
We'll leave it at that. I can't think of a better way to end this show. Thank you so much, Marina. That's Marina Chaparro. You can follow her for nutrition advice for kids and families at NutriChicos.com. And before you go, if you are a fan of Petri Dish, please consider subscribing to our show on your podcast app. Our archive includes shows on how boxing helps people with Parkinson's, on vitamin D deficiency, and how psychedelics might be useful in treating PTSD. Thank you, and now the credits. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TPR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. I researched, reported, and wrote the show. Jacob composed all the music, created the sound design, and edited the script. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.